Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken in my Missouri cold reader seat. Maybe not as cold as it's getting up by you in the Dubuque area, but it will be below zero down here. But I'm in my Friday, January 12th reader seat for the reading of the Telegraph Herald for Friday, January 12th, 2024. And we begin with our first piece from Above the Fold. A creditor. NICC complaint lacks merit. The accrediting organization for Northeast Iowa Community College has deemed that a complaint filed against the institution by its recently ousted president lacks merit and will not be investigated further. After reviewing NICC's response to the complaint filed by former President Herbert Riedel, the Higher Learning Commission determined NICC provided sufficient evidence to show that the issues in his complaint, quote, do not indicate substantive noncompliance with HLC standards, according to a letter from HLC officials to NICC. Riedel filed the complaint with the HLC after the college's Board of Trustees placed him on paid administrative leave in October, and days before the board voted to terminate his contract in November. He also filed a complaint with the Iowa Department of Education, as well as complaints against board members with the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board. The Telegraph Herald obtained a copy of Riedel's Department of Education complaint, which includes his complaint to the HLC and paints a picture of increasingly frosty relations between Riedel, trustees, and the NICC Foundation prior to his termination. In it, Riedel wrote that trustees maintained inappropriately close relationships with college employees, micromanaged him as president, violated open meetings laws, and abused positions of authority. In a statement Wednesday, NICC officials wrote that the college continues to cooperate with all entities investigating Riedel's complaint. The Board of Trustees and college have not micromanaged Dr. Riedel, violated open meeting laws, mismanaged the college, or violated any other laws or regulations, the statement reads. Riedel became NICC president in July 2022. In his complaint to the Iowa Department of Education, he contends that dissatisfaction with his leadership began barely 2 months later, when he sent a Labor Day email to the college using the phrase, working men and women. Riedel wrote that administrative staff took issue with this wording because it could offend non-binary individuals, which Riedel viewed as an unconstitutional attempt to manage speech on campus. In a phone interview with the TH on Thursday, Riedel said following this incident, he found several areas which he felt the college was engaging in discrimination based on political ideology and limited his free speech. When I pushed back against some of these issues, I found some resistance. First on the part of some of the administrators, and then on the part of board members, he said. Board of Trustees meeting minutes state that on May 15, 2023, the board held a closed session to evaluate Riedel's performance. On June 19, during another closed session, the board voted to implement a performance action plan for Riedel. The plan, included in Riedel's complaint, describes a lack of trust between Riedel and NICC staff, along with unsatisfactory business/community relations and a lack of understanding of Iowa's community college system. To address these concerns, the plan required Riedel to share messages intended for the student body or all faculty and staff with applicable members of the leadership team before sending them. He also needed to, quote, obtain advice, end quote, from the team before making decisions, among other requirements. The plan was non-objective, vindictive, overly prescriptive, and consisted of the board becoming even more involved in the day-to-day management of the college, Riedel wrote in his complaint. He also claims the vote to impose the plan was illegal because it occurred in closed session. Board members Jim Anderson, Kathy Gunderson, Gary McAndrew, Sue Runyon, and Daniel White declined to comment for this article. Board member Tom Chesney said he was unavailable at the time he was contacted. Board members Dean Sherman and John Finley did not respond to requests for comment. During the summer, friction continued to build between Riedel and board members, particularly board chair Jim Anderson. In the complaint, Riedel lists a plethora of allegations against Anderson, from political discrimination to undermining of the president's authority. Riedel wrote that on July 12, 2023, Anderson asked him to sign his candidate nomination petition for re-election. Riedel wrote that he felt intimidated by the request and considered it both a campaign ethics violation and an abuse of power. The following week, Riedel wrote that Anderson asked to speak to the deans on NICC's Piazza campus to see if they knew anyone who could apply for the vacant Board of Trustees seat in District 9. Riedel wrote that an HLC official told him such an action would not be appropriate for a board chair, which he communicated to Anderson in a series of increasingly tense emails. It is generally not a good idea for board members to directly make requests of individual employees other than the president, Riedel wrote. Obviously, this is a change in presidential policy, Anderson responded. In the past, board members were free and encouraged to contact an NICC vice president, dean, faculty member, or staff member if they had a question. Riedel also took aim at former NICC vice president of institutional effectiveness and advancement and now NICC board member Wendy Knight, whom he accused of violating Iowa code based on prohibited use of influence through her personal business's work with the NICC Foundation. In a statement Knight gave in her personal capacity, not as a trustee, she wrote, "I am committed to the due process that is being followed, and I am confident in the transparency of the process and the truthful outcome." The complaint also includes a statement of concern presented to trustees by NICC Foundation Board of Directors President Julie Huskamp. She wrote that in July 2023, the NICC Foundation Executive Committee voted to support current NICC employee Anna Burns for the role of Executive Director for Advancement. Riedel wrote in his complaint that Burns did not meet the minimum job experience requirements, so he planned to conduct a national search to fill the post. He claims Huskamp then wrote a letter threatening to withhold $300,000 in foundation funding if Burns was not appointed. Huskamp wrote in her statement that on September 28, 2023, the executive committee voted to take a motion to the full foundation board that would withhold funds beyond those designated for scholarships until the foundation board regains confidence in the stability of college leadership and operations. Her statement does not indicate if the issue ever was taken up by the full board. In the last several months, I have received countless contacts from dedicated employees who are afraid for their jobs, who have been demeaned and berated, who have witnessed inappropriate comments and breaches of confidentiality from the president, and who are truly worried about the future of the college, she wrote. I count myself as one of the people who is truly worried. In an emailed statement, Burns wrote that she was not part of discussions pertaining to her hiring as Executive Director of Advancement, which occurred November 14, 2023. The position of the foundation has always been that hiring is at the sole discretion of the college president, she wrote. In an emailed statement on behalf of the foundation board, Huschamp called Riedel's allegations misrepresentative and inaccurate. The college is responsible for hiring and retaining qualified personnel to work with the foundation who are experienced in planning for and managing diverse financial contributions and community outreach, she wrote. In early August 2023, attorney Christopher Fry sent a letter to the NICC Board of Trustees on Riedel's behalf. The letter asked the board to attend a training retreat conducted by the Association of Community College Trustees, redo Riedel's evaluation, and suspend the performance action plan. On August 21st, the board made a motion to engage ACCT to conduct an evaluation of Riedel, but the motion failed. On September 18th, the board passed a motion to engage ACCT for a modified evaluation of Riedel, but the evaluation was not completed because Riedel was placed on leave October 9th. His contract was terminated November 20th. Dave Doms, NICC's Vice President of Finance and Administration, is serving as acting president. In their statement Wednesday, NICC officials wrote that the college is following all legal and confidentiality requirements as part of the termination process. The Iowa Department of Education is reviewing Riedel's complaint to determine areas where investigation may be needed, according to Communications Director Heather Doe. Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board officials wrote in an email Thursday that Riedel's complaint has not yet been presented to the board. In an emailed statement Thursday, Riedel wrote that though the HLC determined that no further investigation was necessary, he feels the issue he raised in that complaint still constitute serious concerns. The board's refusal to honor its contract with me and allow me to return to work is wasting an enormous amount of taxpayer money and is leaving the college rudderless at a time when it desperately needs competent leadership, he wrote. This effort will be vigorously contested in a hearing according to the provisions of Iowa law. Our next piece from the front page has with it two pictures. The first one, a large picture of a gentleman, appears to be talking to someone across a table that we can't see. And the caption reads, Dave Hofferbecker takes part in a group session at the Liberty Recovery Community on Thursday in Dubuque. Hofferbecker is a former resident of the Recovery Center, which will mark its two-year anniversary in February. And the other smaller picture included is a picture of the center, and it says, the Liberty Recovery Community is located at 2216 White Street in Dubuque. And our article is Recovery Center Empowers Residents. Dave Hofferbecker went to the same treatment center five times in his battle with alcoholism. Each time, he wasn't able to stay sober. That is, until the last time, when he went straight from the treatment center to Liberty Recovery Community in Dubuque. Now, Hofferbecker 57, is approaching 21 months of sobriety. He said the program has been wonderful for him, and the residents have formed a community. On weekends, he said, they usually get together for a potluck. He recently moved out of his apartment on the campus, but still attends regular programming there and Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. If you were to have places like this maybe 30 years ago, maybe I would have gotten sober sooner. Maybe I could have stayed married, Hofferbacher said. But that's in the past. The Liberty Recovery Community Campus, located at 2216 White Street, includes Liberty Recovery and Training Center and a housing complex. Run by nonprofit Operation Empower, it provides free wraparound support and housing for area residents with substance use disorders and co-occurring mental health conditions. Operation Empower Executive Director Michelle Mialakis said the center's case managers offer any kind of support residents need. Many come to the center with a criminal record, debt, or poor employment history. Mialakis said caseworkers help residents navigate those obstacles to find employment and maintain a stream of income. Staff members also provide support, such as advocating for residents in court proceedings and transporting them to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. To provide a high level of accountability, residents undergo breathalyzer and urine tests frequently. The apartments also come fully furnished, including items such as pots and pans, Mialakis said. The center now is approaching its two-year anniversary in February, and despite financial struggles, Mialakis said it has been a success. She said the 17 residents graduated from the program last year, and staff members have helped about 30 people each year find employment. In 2022, Operation Empower was awarded $291,000 of Dubuque County's American Rescue Plan Act funds, but that money recently ran out. Now, Mialakis said the center is running on donations. To function at the level Mialakis wants, the center needs around $450,000 to $500,000 annually. For the past 2 years, the center has been running on half of that amount annually. We're not a top-heavy organization. We do a tremendous amount with the little we have, Mialakis said. But funding is an issue. With more money, Mialakis said, she ideally would hire more case managers, a therapist, development director, program manager, and peer advocate. To raise funds, she seeks to increase local partnerships this year, pursue more grant funding, and build community connections. She is also hosting an open house at the center from noon to 2 p.m. February 2nd to introduce the public to the facility and its residents. Mialakis said she wants people to see how successful the program is and hear the stories of residents and graduates who have come back from the brink of death due to their addiction. James Hansen, 57, lives at the center and said the program saved his life after he battled alcoholism for about 25 years. Before that, he said, he had a job, was active in the community, and owned a house and car. Alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful, Hansen said. You don't see it coming until it's too late. I lost everything. Hansen was sleeping in his car and staying at a local homeless shelter when he read about the center and wanted to give it a try. They welcomed me in with open arms, and this has just been the best thing that I've ever seen, and I've been around the block, Hansen said. I've seen many treatment centers, and there's nothing like this. Hansen has lived there for 7 months and is motivated to graduate from the program. He wants to help others who have been through what he has. I'll probably teach a class here. Those are my goals, Hansen said. I can help a lot of people because I've been in the trenches. Longtime Iowa Senator Yoakum plans to retire. Our final front page piece, and it is accompanied with a picture of Senator Yoakum at a podium, and the caption beneath it is, Iowa Senator Pam Yoakum, Democrat Dubuque, participates during a press conference at A.Y. McDonald Park in Dubuque on November 15, 2023. Our article reads, Iowa Senator Pam Yoakum, Democrat Dubuque, announced today that she will not seek another term, making this the last of more than 30 years she has spent in the Iowa legislature. Yoakum, currently serving as the Iowa Senate Minority Leader, began her career in the Iowa House of Representatives in 1993 and has been a member of the legislature ever since, moving to the Senate in 2009. During her time in office, Yoakum has been one of the most consistent faces in Iowa Democratic politics, spending a stint as Senate President, aiding numerous Democrats' presidential campaigns ahead of the Iowa caucuses, and holding significant influence over her caucus in the legislature. Yoakum assumed her current role as Senate Minority Leader in 2023 during a party leadership shuffle. On Thursday afternoon, in the office granted to her in that role, decorated with a panoramic print of Dubuque's riverfront, Yoakum expressed her gratitude to Dubuquers for showing her so much support for so long. I hope that the people of Dubuque understand how much I love them and my community, she said. It's been a good ride. You just can't ask for more of an honor than for people to have enough belief and trust in you that they want you to be their voice. Yoakum was an active participant in state politics for years before running for office, as she worked closely with her late ex-husband and former Iowa Representative Tom Yoakum, Democrat Dubuque. On Thursday, she recalled being a member of a tight-knit group of Dubuque County Democrats when they were all in their 20s, working with her then-husband, along with former state lawmaker and U.S. Representative Tom Talkey and former Iowa Representative Tom Galoon of Dyersville. We were young, and we grew up in politics, she said. There has been a Yoakum on the Dubuque ballot since 1974. Even though Tom and I divorced in 85, when he retired in 92, he called me and said, I want you to run for my seat. But it seems like time for another generation. Among accomplishments Yoakum said she was proud of were work getting state aid for major Dubuque projects, such as the Port of Dubuque, B Branch Creek Restoration, and jump-starting Crescent Community Health Center, and helping create statewide programs such as the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan and the Iowa Public Information Board. Yoakum said a guiding light and inspiration through most of her time in office has been her late daughter, Sarah, who died in 2018. On Thursday, Yoakum told the story of Sarah on a late autumn walk with her father, breaking away when she saw a homeless man on a bench with no boots and hugging him. Yoakum said she basically had decided this would be her last term before being tapped as Senate Minority Leader last year. Then, when we had all that hubbub in our caucus last summer, my phone rang off the hook, she said. I said, I'm not even planning to run again. I'm planning to retire. Several said, then we know for sure you're the leader for the right reason because we know you're in it for us, not your higher political ambition. Yoakum said the current Iowa Senate has plenty of good options to succeed her as minority leader when her term ends on January 13, 2025. We have a lot of young talent in our caucus right now, she said. I've tried to bring people along to get to know the system a little better, but there's plenty of talent that can lead us forward. In the meantime, Yoakum plans to finish her service in the legislature with a busy year. As minority leader, Yoakum leads not only her caucus's work in this legislative session, but also in campaigning for seats open in the 2024 election. "There's so much still to do," she said. "There's still a climate crisis. We still have a democracy that is in many ways hanging by a thread. Right now, I am truly just focused on giving the next year everything I have to try and get the Senate Democrats to pick up some seats and start heading back toward the majority." Yoakum has a close connection with many people at the state capitol. Moving through the building, she knows both legislative staff and pages well enough to ask about their families and will stop and talk with lawmakers in both parties and both chambers. "Politics is about relationships," she said. "You have to get to a level of maturity in life to know that you can agree to disagree. You can agree to disagree and still be respectful and still get along and like the other person. Because today we may disagree. Tomorrow we may be on this exact same page and fighting for the same issue." Yoakum shared that longtime Dubuque Labor leader Tom Townsend will run for her seat this year and said he was doing so for the right reasons. "He's someone who does understand that this would not be about him, that he's part of something bigger than himself, and that public office is an honor and a privilege, and one he would have to earn," she said. Townsend said he would be proud to succeed Yoakum. "It was a great honor when I started talking to Pam about it, that she would put her faith in me," he said. "My focus would be on workers' issues, just like it always has been." Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Dubuque Democrat, did not respond to a call for comment on Thursday, but complimented Yoakum to the Telegraph Herald the day before when discussing Yoakum's work as minority leader. "She has been a tremendous mentor and source of wisdom about this place for me," she said. Now we turn to our opinion page and our view, the view that represents the point of views of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. Diversity, inclusion keys to building a strong workforce. Whether it's a birthday, anniversary, or some other date, special observances are a natural opportunity for taking stock. Monday's national holiday marking the birth of the late Martin Luther King Jr., who would have turned 95 on January 15th, is one such occasion. How do the words of Dr. King resonate today? Are we moving closer to the kind of world he dreamed of? In some respects, there is progress. In the business community, in our schools, and in local government, diversity, equity, and inclusion have become more prominent talking points. Businesses have formed committees and participated in programming to become more aware of inequities. But in Dubuque, and to some degree in all communities, there is pushback. There are those who would dismiss striving for the qualities of diversity, equity, and inclusion as the mantra of woke progressives. Last year, the Iowa legislature passed a law requiring the Iowa Board of Regents to review all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at the state's public universities. That resulted in regents gutting all DEI efforts at Iowa, Iowa State, and UNI. Meanwhile, University of Wisconsin regents initially rejected a deal to limit diversity positions at the system's two dozen campuses, including UW-Platteville, in exchange for money to cover staff raises and construction projects, saying it would sell out minority and LGBTQ plus students and faculty. And then days later, they did an about-face and approved the plan. But we need to start to look at the importance of inclusivity from a broader viewpoint. Putting aside for a moment the fact that creating a more equitable and inclusive community is simply the right thing to do. There's another reason every citizen should be on board with this effort. We need people. Talk to anyone who has a job, and that person likely will tell you about being shorthanded in the workplace. From manufacturers to offices, healthcare providers, law enforcement and public safety, the judiciary, retailers and schools, just about every employer could use more help. As the business community attempts to address recruitment challenges, initiatives such as Inclusive Dubuque have helped workplace leaders understand the importance of equity and diversity. The impact is multi-leveled. When a community grows in its diversity and cultural awareness, it becomes more welcoming. When businesses and industries become more diverse, they are better able to innovate. Branching out to a broader and more diverse pool of prospective employees brings better applicants into the mix. As we seek ways to keep young people in our community, a diverse and inclusive culture is imperative. The next generation of workers sees the benefit of diversity and doesn't want to live in a homogeneous society. Today, marking another Martin Luther King observance and considering where this nation was when he was murdered more than 55 years ago, much progress has been made. But the work must continue. It's promising to see strides being made in Dubuque. This year, let's make Martin Luther King Jr. Day more than just another three-day weekend. Let's make an effort to learn something about Dr. King, to extend his legacy in some way. His short life was so remarkable. We have set aside a day to remember his amazing leadership and to try to follow his example. Today, let's find a way to honor the memory of an incredible American and promote a more inclusive community. It can only make us stronger. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, and I am reading from the Friday, January 12th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we have one letter to the editor. Haley, a strong candidate who can win. Senator Chris Cornoyer, Iowa State Senate District 35. Let me tell you why I endorsed Nikki Haley in the Republican presidential primary, why I committed to serve as her statewide co-chair, and why I will caucus for her on January 15th. As governor of South Carolina, she turned around a struggling economy and 11% unemployment by cutting taxes, removing burdensome regulations, and bringing business to the state. She reformed the outdated education system to help rural students who were left behind. She restored trade and vocational classes for high school students. As the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, she showed strength and toughness, taking the "kick me" sign off America's back. She fought for sanctions on North Korea, defended our ally Israel, and stood up to our enemies. I have seen Nikki Haley put in the work across Iowa. She's answered every question and given solutions to the issues most important to us: a struggling economy, the border crisis, an outdated education system that needs transparency. As we approach the caucuses, her momentum is growing. I have seen people attend her town halls who have never caucused before and are all in by the end of the event. We need a nominee who can win in November. Nikki Haley consistently beats Joe Biden head-to-head by double digits, and in one poll by as much as 17 points. A double-digit win brings victories up and down the ballot. I encourage every Iowan to caucus on January 15th and vote for Nikki Haley. We now turn to today's obituaries. Ruth Cruiser, Hazel Green. Ruth Cruiser, 88, of Hazel Green, passed away Sunday, January 7th. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, January 15th, at St. Francis de Sales Catholic Church in Hazel Green, Wisconsin, with Father Peter Auer officiating. Burial will follow in the St. Francis de Sales Church Cemetery in Hazel Green. Family and friends may call from 3 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, January 14th, at the Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City. Also on Monday, January 15th, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the funeral home. Ruth was born on November 18th, 1935, to Roy and Hortense Hemmer Lynch in Holy Cross, Iowa. She attended Sacred Heart Catholic School in Fillmore, Iowa, and graduated from Cascade High School. She married David Cruiser on October 25th, 1955, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Fillmore. Ruth enjoyed farming, gardening, canning, reading, sewing, playing cards and games, volunteering at church, school, and community, traveling in the motorhome, attending grandchildren's events. She was an excellent cook, especially her exceptional Christmas cookies and date nut bread. She enjoyed time with family and friends and will be dearly missed by all who knew and loved her. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City is serving the family. In lieu of plants and flowers, a Ruth Cruiser Memorial Fund has been established. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.howdenshieldfuneralhome.com. Rose M. Wolf, Cascade, Iowa. Rose M. Wolf, 85, of Cascade, passed away on Thursday, January 4th at her home in Cascade. Due to incoming severe weather, the visitation for Rose has been postponed on Saturday until Thursday. Visitation for Rose will be held from 9 to 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, January 18th at the St. Martin's Catholic Church in Cascade, where a rosary will be held at 10:30 a.m. and services will be held at 11, with Father Joseph M. Wolf, MFVA, presiding. Concelebrating will be Reverend Mark Osterhaus, Reverend Daniel Knepper, Father Leonard Ravella, MFVA, Father Mark Christina, MFVA, Father John Paul Zeller, MFVA, and Father Miguel Soherman, MFVA. Burial will be held in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade. Charles E. Hawkins, Cascade. Charles E. Chuck Hawkins, 80, of Cascade, passed away Saturday, January 6th at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, Iowa, due to a recently diagnosed lung disease. Due to incoming severe weather on Friday, the visitation for Chuck has been postponed until Sunday. Visitation for Chuck will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. on Sunday, January 14th at the Reif Funeral Home in Cascade. Visitation will also be held after 9 a.m. on Monday at the funeral home. Services for Chuck will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, January 15th, at Cascade Community Presbyterian Church in Cascade, with Reverend Wayne Peach and Pastor Rick Hawkins presiding. Burial will be held in Cascade Community Cemetery in Cascade, Iowa, with full military honors afforded by the Cascade American Legion Post 528. Marie T. Recker, Manchester. Marie T. Recker, 91, of Manchester, died Thursday, January 11th. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, January 14th, with a rosary service at 4:30 at Bonnenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home in Manchester, and from 10 to 10:45 Monday, January 15th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Manchester, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Jeanette E. Laufenberg. Jeanette E. Laufenberg, 94, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, January 10th. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 16th, at St. Anthony Catholic Church, where services will follow. Interment will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Helen Lang, Grundy Center. Helen Lang, 94, of Grundy Center and formerly of Farley, died Monday, January 8th. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, January 15th at Abel's Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Grundy Center. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 16th at St. Gabriel's Catholic Church in Rhinebeck. Burial will be in Rose Hill Cemetery in Grundy Center. Sandra C. Reedy, Prairie du Chien. Sandra C. Reedy, 64, of Prairie du Chien, died Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday, January 20th, at Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Prairie du Chien, where services will follow. Burial will be at a later date. James Sheehy, Dyersville. James Sheehy, 55, of Dyersville, died Wednesday, January 10th. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Sunday, January 14th, at Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, January 15th, St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Joseph E. Rand, Prairie du Chien. Joseph E. Rand, 85, of Prairie du Chien, died Sunday, December 7th. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Monday, January 15th at St. Peter Evangelical Lutheran Church in Prairie du Chien, where services will follow. Burial will be in Utica Lutheran Cemetery in Mount Sterling. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. Peter J. Roth. Peter J. Roth, 60, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, January 10th. Visitation will be held from 1 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 14th at Holy Ghost Catholic Church. A prayer service will follow visitation. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 15th at the church. Entombment will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. The passings bring sadness to many, but we also have the births that bring gladness to many. And today we have just two. Wednesday, January 10th, Haverland, Cody and Samantha Haverland of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Schaefer, Jake and Nicole Schaefer of Asbury, a boy at Mercy One. Welcome, little ones. Now we'll turn to some news from Dubuque and the tri-states. In the first piece we have, details of probe dominate first day of trial testimony. Details on the early hours of the investigation were the main focus of the first day of testimony in an ongoing attempted murder trial against a Dubuque man accused of stabbing another man in June. Dayron Sanchez Guzman, 27, of Dubuque, is charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with attempted murder, willful injury causing serious injury, and going armed with intent. His trial began Wednesday afternoon with jury selection. Charging documents state that police responded to the area of Pennsylvania Avenue and Green Street on June 1st and found Alberto Hernandez Avila, 32, of Dubuque, bleeding from the torso, saying he had been stabbed multiple times. Guzman is accused of stabbing Hernandez Avila, commandeering his vehicle, and chasing him, though Hernandez Avila was able to elude the vehicle, according to the charging documents. Opening statements and testimony began Thursday, with Iowa District Court Judge Thomas Bitter overseeing the proceedings. Dubuque County Assistant Attorney Josh Sims told jurors Thursday morning he plans to present evidence that proves Guzman ambushed, stabbed, and chased Hernandez Avila, 32, with his own car. Mr. Sanchez Guzman implored, asked, texted Alberto Hernandez Avila to get him to come over to his house, and upon getting there, stabbed him twice. When Alberto was able to flee, to get away, he tried to chase him down, Sims said. That's what the evidence in this case is going to show. Defense attorney Les Blair asked the jury to keep an open mind and not draw any conclusions as the state presents its case first. I believe that the evidence is going to show you a number of inconsistencies in Alberto Hernandez Avila's statements, that there are several things he's going to tell you that are either not supported by the facts or contradicted by other things, Blair said. The first witness called to testify was Dubuque Police Officer Jeff Tupper, who was the first officer to respond to calls of Hernandez Avila walking near Pennsylvania Avenue and Green Street. Tupper testified that because Hernandez Avila only spoke Spanish, he could not easily communicate with him. However, Hernandez Avila was cooperative and approached him for help when he arrived. He actually lifted up his T-shirt and he exposed a wound to his abdomen, Tupper said. Just having done this job for a long time, it was obvious to me it was a puncture wound. The other witnesses included two other officers and an investigator with the Dubuque Police Department who were part of the investigation. One officer, Eugene Hinchin, testified that he responded to the area near the apartment where the stabbing allegedly took place on the morning of June 1st and discovered two blood trails outside. He also saw a car matching the description of the car Hernandez Avila said he drove to the apartment parked there. The court is set to reconvene at 9 a.m. today, barring any weather-related delays. Our next piece, Ramaswamy touts unique candidacy. 4 days before the Iowa caucuses, Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy told a crowd in Dubuque there simply is no other candidate quite like him. I'd rather lose this election and speak the truth than play some fake game of political snakes and ladders. Ramaswamy told about 75 people Thursday at the Holiday Inn, Dubuque, Galena. The fact that I am presented as a radical candidate tells you how far we have come as a country. Ramaswamy has been making the rounds throughout the state, seeking to bolster his support ahead of the Iowa caucuses on Monday, January 15th. In a December Iowa poll from the Des Moines Register, NBC News, Mediacom, 5% of responding, likely Republican caucus-goers, picked Ramaswamy as their first choice for president. The current frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, had 51% support in the same poll. Still, the 38-year-old businessman on Thursday repeated his belief he can win the election and carry on many of the policies Trump pursued as president. We love the man, Trump, because he got this fight started, Ramaswamy said. It's my job to finish it. Ramaswamy said many positions he held at the start of his presidential campaign had been adopted by other candidates. He repeatedly has voiced his opposition for continued military support for Ukraine as it continues to defend off the Russian invasion, calling instead for the U.S. to pursue a peace settlement. He also said that as president, he would pardon every peaceful protester at the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol, eliminate numerous federal government agencies such as the Department of Education, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and FBI, and call in military personnel to enforce border protection. We're not going to reform them, Ramaswamy said, referring to the federal agencies he has in his sights. We are going to get in there and shut them down. The presidential hopeful also touted his belief that the climate change agenda is a hoax and said he would end birthright citizenship and protect children from school shootings by having the federal government provide funding for schools to hire armed guards. During Ramaswamy's campaign, Democrats in Iowa and nationally have pushed back and characterized his views as extreme on issues such as climate change and abortion. While attendees at Thursday's stop were eager to hear from Ramaswamy, many also were excited to see popular conservative commentator Candace Owens, who recently has joined Ramaswamy on his tour through Iowa. Speaking at the event, Owens said she chose to leave her seven-week-old baby to join Ramaswamy because of how strongly she believes in his plan for the U.S. "He made me feel hope again. The hope that I want my children to feel," Owens said. Jerry Niederhauser drove an hour from his home in Mechanicsville, Iowa, to hear Ramaswamy speak in Dubuque. He said it will be difficult for Ramaswamy to topple Trump, but not impossible. "I believe we are laying down our freedoms and liberties, and Vivek is the only one talking about it," he said. "I wouldn't be here if I didn't think he has a shot." Now we'll start looking at some of our news in brief. Expected storm could impact delivery of TH. Delivery of the Telegraph Herald could be impacted both today and on Saturday, January 13th, due to a forecasted winter storm. The Telegraph Herald building will be closed to the public today. Customers who need assistance can call 563-588-5620 or email memberservices@telegraphherald.com. Carriers will work to safely deliver newspapers throughout the tri-state area. We appreciate customers' patience regarding any weather-related delivery impacts. Our content also is available at telegraphherald.com and via our e-edition. Winter storm warning issued for area. Forecasters have issued a winter storm warning for much of the tri-state area, with snow and dangerously cold wind chills expected. The National Weather Service issued a winter storm warning for Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, and Jackson counties in Iowa, Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin, and Joe Davies County in Illinois. The warning is effective through noon Saturday, January 13th. Jones County, Iowa, is under a blizzard warning from 5 p.m. today through noon Saturday. The forecast calls for heavy snow, some mixed precipitation, and significant blowing now. Snow accumulation of 7 to 14 inches and ice accumulations of a light glaze are possible. Winds gusting as high as 40 miles an hour are predicted, along with wind chills as low as 40 below zero. Travel will be very difficult. Blowing and drifting snow could reduce visibility to a quarter mile or less. City of Dubuque offices closed Monday. City of Dubuque offices will be closed on Monday, January 15th, in observance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The closure includes City Hall and other city officials and facilities, according to a press release. Additionally, the Dubuque City Council will hold its second meeting of the month on Tuesday, January 16th, rather than Monday, with a work session at 5:30 p.m. and the regular meeting following at 6:30 p.m. Dubuque's curbside trash and recycling collection will continue as normal, and the Dubuque Metropolitan Area Solid Waste Agency landfill will be open Monday. The Jewel's fixed route buses, minibuses, and downtown shuttle will operate on normal Monday schedules. Parking meter violations will not be enforced. Carnegie Stout Public Library will be closed. Man sentenced to probation for assault. A Dubuque County man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for striking a woman with a bat. Tyler D.C. Braun, 32, of Epworth, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zerny-Ackley in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of domestic assault with use or display of a weapon. As part of a plea deal, a charge of first-degree burglary was dismissed. The charges stem from an October 3rd incident in the 3200 block of Getty Terrace in Dubuque. Court documents state that a woman told police her ex-boyfriend, Braun, entered her apartment without her permission and assaulted her. During the disturbance, Braun picked up an aluminum baseball bat and swung it at the woman's leg, causing a large amount of redness. The woman then fled the residence. Now we'll take a look at our weekend buzz. Whatever you're going to be able to get out there and do this weekend, I don't know. It sounds like you're going to have some terrible snowstorms. But nonetheless, if it's okay and you can get out, here are some things to do. The Dubuque Symphony Orchestra Ultimate Rock Hits. Today and Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar, Diamond Joe Casino, 301 Bell Street, 8 p.m. both days. The Dubuque Symphony Orchestra will collaborate with area rock bands and musicians to play hits from the 1970s to the present, including songs by Aerosmith, Van Halen, The Rolling Stones, and Led Zeppelin. Attendees must stay in their assigned section, must be 21 and over to attend. General admission, $25 to $40 per person. Tickets and more information at tinyurl.com/DSOURH2024. Becoming an Outdoor Woman, Winter Workshop, Saturday, Swiss Valley Nature Center. 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Women from all walks of life are welcome to meet and explore nature together with guided conversation, meditation, and hiking. Coffee, tea, and cocoa will be provided. Attendees are asked to bring their own lunch. Registration in advance is required. Registration fee, $5 per person. Registration and more information at tinyurl.com/outdoorwomen.